This is the DRF Players Podcast.
What's going on? It's Friday, March 27th. It's the Daily Race Inform Players Podcast. Peter Thomas Fornital is here. Michael Hogan is here. I'm Matt Bernier. Gentlemen.
How you doing today? What's going on?
You know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. We had Justin Zayden earlier on live. We wrapped that up a little while ago. Just scrambling to get a lot of things done in a short amount of time to get ready for tomorrow because we got a jam-packed day.
How you doing with the with your basketball? You dip a toe in the water in any of this stuff?
Yeah, well, as far as the pools are concerned, I'm currently number four here in the DRF office pool.
Nice.
Out of 50 or so. I'm currently number three in JB in her office pool.
Nice.
Over at her employment. I'm not going to reveal that. Let's just say it's a sports place.
TGI and, Fridays?
No, sports. sports, not restaurant. And we're just getting all sorts of ready. I still got the Final Four still alive. Tonight's going to be an important night, though, because I got Oklahoma going to the Final Four.
Okay.
So they're going to end up playing Michigan State. And March is going to get renamed Izzo.
Yeah.
Because there's something about Tom Izzo just every single year.
The gamblers love that guy.
Oh, I mean, because you get value on him no matter what, especially a year like this where they make him a seven seed. I mean, you know, that in and of itself. I mean, Izzo is just going to get there no matter what. But no, everything so far so good.
A little bit of a connection between the tournament and horse racing. You know, they're out at the Orleans now doing the Horse Player World Series. A rumor that a couple of wise guys did okay during the day yesterday on day one of the Horse Player World Series, but then went to the sports book and proceeded to lay a beating on the bookies in the NCAA tournament. To the fact where it was rumored that Jonathan Kinchin and Nick Tamaro showed up at the Orleans today in a limo.
What?
That's the rumor.
What were they? I mean, last night was pretty formful.
I think there was some sort of parlay action. It might have been carrying over, but
there was
champagne being popped and limos being.
I can't even imagine because I mean,
down.
You think about it. Last night, Kentucky doubled up West Virginia. Literally, they beat them by more than West Virginia scored. Arizona had a nail biter with Xavier, but that was, I suppose, if they took the points.
My best guess is we're talking about parlays with points,
right?
And points and unders and overs.
Because otherwise, they're putting up big dollars just to get even money.
Doesn't sound like either of those guys' styles.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, that's good for them, and best of luck to them out there.
They could have taken Kentucky minus 30 or even minus 35, maybe.
Well,
I don't know what that would have paid, but that would have been all right.
I don't even know if they allow you to do that. Changing the line out there.
Yeah, you can buy points and that kind of thing and apply it in teasers and this and that, I think. But it usually would go the other way, wouldn't it? I'm assuming this is, you know, multiple game parlays with
they had
overs
a good
and yeah.
They had
was,
a good night.
It was a good thing, apparently.
The rich get richer.
That's right. So for today, quick little rundown. We'll start off with the big news story. We'll get into that in a minute. We'll have tournament talk. You have an interview with Kinchin.
Yes, speak of the devil. We got a nice chat with him based on what some are calling the greatest weekend in NHC Tour history, where he ran second and first in subsequent NHC Tour events last weekend.
We'll wrap that in with some tournament talk. You'll give us the rundown of what we've got this weekend. Busy weekend.
Crazy Saturday, mellow Sunday, but yeah, I'm
busy
balanced.
Weekend all
Big
around.
Stuff.
Then we'll get into the public handicapper races, which, again, we're in the prep season. Accordingly so, we have the preps. We'll get into that. And anything else, we got a little bit of news as far as our wager, our draft, our teams, what the prize will end up being.
We left you hanging last time.
We got
a solution. We got that settled out. It wasn't quite the fight that the point system was for the tournament. That's
no.
The good news.
No. And
manicure involved.
And anything else that comes up in between now and
don't forget the contest. We got a little contest.
We do have a contest
this week.
Going on because there's another certain.
We'll be giving away another California Chrome.
Another
we're
going
to make
horse.
You scrub through the whole podcast to listen to
that's
the
right.
Parameters.
That's
for
the
that.
Very end. Yeah. So you're stuck with us. Sorry. The news. Shared belief. Charlestown Classic, assess.
I was surprised. I didn't see it coming. You know, we'd heard the talk about Oaklawn, and then we'd heard the talk on the Steve Big Show about maybe not Oaklawn. It seemed a little strange to me. Just I'm not complaining about it or anything, but just in terms of it seems like a purse grab, which is great. You know, that's fine. That's within connections' rights. It just I don't know. On some level, I felt like, well, if they were going to do something weird to go for the money, maybe they should have just gone to Dubai. I don't know. It left me not really feeling one way or the other. But that thought did pop in my head. But I don't know. Maybe they figure this is a way to get a big share of purse and then still have a fairly fresh horse to, for their other goals. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we talked about Dubai, and Dubai just knocks such a large portion of your horse's season out between the quarantine and the shipping. And, you know, maybe they just didn't want to deal with losing however many months of potential races for him. And they figured...
I mean, is it really months multiple for Dubai? Like, when will we see California Chrome next?
Well...
I would imagine no sooner than... June?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple months then.
I would think. You know, and maybe they figure, let's let the North American U.S. tour begin for shared belief.
That's true. There has been some talk about, yeah, getting him around to some places, and that's a desire that I've expressed, certainly. I'm the guy who keeps saying, don't just keep beating up on the same horses in California, so I'm the last guy who's going to complain about something like this. Feel a little bad for the Warrens-Veneta connections, thinking they were going to get to Charlestown, and now they got to run against that thing.
And but, now maybe they rethink it and try and tackle Untappable.
Yeah. Well, right, the way that things have gone. Yeah. What's your take on this, Matt? You've always had strong opinions about this horse.
I just think it's a very peculiar decision. I agree. I mean, if I would not, you know, argue with anyone saying, you know, we're going for the money. Well, but my thought is, if you're going for the money, why wouldn't you have just gone to Dubai?
Right. Yeah. Like what I was saying. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's the same. Like, so now this to me is a little bit odd, especially if the Met is still, if the Metropolitan Handicap is the goal.
Which they say it is. That still was mentioned in those articles.
You're going to, your intermediate goal or your intermediate, you know, kind of check mark is going to be a three-turn race at a bullring?
Three turns to one turn.
You know, for your first time out of California, I just think it's a very bizarre spot where, and I get that, you know, I had a lot of people send to me, they're like, well, it's not a handicap. And maybe that's why. And I said, fair. But, I mean, he's gonna carry weight again at some point. I mean, it, just
well,
the nature of the beast.
Handicaps aren't what they were either. I mean, I'm sure they could have cut a deal to run at Oaklawn under 129 or whatever.
And again, this is just speculation, and I'm not going to get into the specifics. You can use your imagination. Maybe there was the purse is $1.5 million. Maybe for him it's more.
Maybe the little envelope, little just, Monmouth Park, Bob Baffert, old school.
I'm not saying anything like that. But, I mean, we know it happens. We'll see. I don't know. I just find it very odd. And the money is there. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, if you're really thinking, like, maybe I'm making much too much out of it. I said it when Dan and I were on air the other day, that this is the spot now. I had said that I don't think anyone is in his league right now. I'm going to try and beat him.
Interesting.
Because that, to me, I mean, if he's going to lose, it's going to be at some quirky little thing like that. We saw what Imperative turned into. He turned into a world beater. And you know, Dan brings up a good point. Some of those horses can just sort of wiggle around those corners like it's no big deal. Others don't take to it so well. I mean, you make a horse like Game On Dude look normal.
Sure, belief also. I mean, I'm not saying he's always run great, but I mean, if at the times in his races when he's looked mortal, rare as those are, when he wasn't getting mugged,
what are you talking about?
Never mind. But I'm not sure. I mean, I wish I had looked at the tape again before saying this. I'm just sort of speaking extemporaneously here. But it's not like he does his best work around the turns. I think that seems safe to say, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
which makes going three on tight turns
tricky.
A little bit more bizarre. Yeah. I don't know.
He's so talented. I think he probably handles the task with aplomb. But
he probably will. But at the end of the day, I mean, if I don't know. I just think it's a very odd spot. If your goal is going to be, you're going to go from three turns to one.
What's strange?
What are you doing? What are you doing? Hey, that's the beauty of it. I don't own the horse.
When is that race?
It is April 18th, a Saturday night at Charlestown.
Well, it gives us some fun plans for April 18th.
April 18th.
Saturday
and that's, you know, the other thing of it too is the timing. There's nothing else that's kind of the lull between the final preps and the Derby. Now we have a Saturday where it's like, all right, clearly the main attraction, arguably in all of racing, is showing up. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe this will hurt the Cromie's feelings, but I would say undoubtedly the biggest attraction in racing right now.
How dare you? Bite your tongue. My goodness. Blasphemy. Let's go into the tournament talk, because then at the end we can just kind of freeform it a little bit. We have to talk about some of the things going on in Dubai as well. So let's get into the tournament talk. Do you want to lay out the weekend first, or do you want
to... Yeah, I'll talk about the weekend. We'll throw it to Jonathan, and then we'll take it back and get on with the show. Three contests tomorrow in the DRF universe. One of them you can't get into. You would have had to qualify already in one of the three round one events on bcqualify.com this month. But tomorrow we got round two. We're going to be awarding seven seats to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge out of that one. Some big names in there. That'll be a fun one to follow along and watch the leaderboard, and I'll have the full report on that on Monday. We also tomorrow have another NHC Tour event on nhcqualify.com for $1.65 up to four seats. The National Handicapping Championship will be on offer in there. And then also we have the first qualifier for the rescheduled Raise Your Game Gulfstream contest, which is going to be on September 19th. The buy-in is $90, and you can win your, I should have double-checked, I think it's $3,000 seat to the Gulfstream contest in September. And then on Sunday, we have the first official qualifier for the Preakness weekend, Santa Anita Betting Challenge. You've heard me rant and rave about how much I love Santa Anita and the job they do out there. That is one I definitely think folks should take a look at, because it's the only thing going on in our neck of the woods on Sunday. So $90 buy-in for that one. I'm sure playing in these contests while he's out at the Orleans in Las Vegas for the Horse Player World Series will be Jonathan Kinchin. I had a chance to sit down with Jonathan this week. Let's send it to the tape.
Jonathan, you were just on the show 3 weeks ago, and I predicted that you'd be back before the end of the year to talk about the goings-on in the NHC Tour. I didn't think it would be so soon, but after landing second in a tour event on Saturday and an outright win on NHC Qualify on Sunday, I figured what better time to have you back.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty crazy weekend. It ended poorly, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point, and then I had to realize, like, hey, get yourself together. You had a really awesome weekend. I've had some really nice notes from people saying how awesome of a weekend it was. So yeah, no, it's been a pretty good run, man. I'm waiting for it to stop, and it just kind of keeps going.
That's great. Yeah, don't think in those terms would be my advice. Just stay in the moment and keep riding the wave. You mentioned getting reactions from other players. That's actually one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. I know you were out, obviously, with me at Santa Anita the previous weekend. How are other players reacting to you at this point? I mean, are we envisioning scenarios where there are Jonathan Kinchin voodoo dolls at this point that people are, you know, twisting the arms and sticking pins in? Or are players just happy for your success? What reaction are you seeing?
Yeah, no, I think it's been more happy, right? I mean, it's been really cool for me because, like, I read your book, and so I got to see all these names and all these, like, big names, Bill Sherman, and you know, that's just the one that's most recent in my mind of people that I've got to actually become friendly with and have conversations with. And not only that, them tell me how amazing the run I've been on is like, it's kind of surreal. It's been really cool, and everyone's been really positive. No one's been too negative. It's, you know, it's funny though. I told you the story when we were at Santa Anita. This one guy, he said, man, you're a lot nicer than I thought you were going to be, which I thought was shocking, because no one's ever accused me of being mean.
But in other words, he wanted to hate you, but then he met you and couldn't? Is that sort of the message I'm getting from that story?
That's kind of how he worded it, yeah. It's been awesome, man. I've said a million times, it's like I had two friends in racing, one and a half, because one of my friends is like super ADD, so he's kind of half in, half out. And now I've got like 35. It's been awesome.
That's great. Well, let's talk about the specifics of yesterday. I know that the big horse for you was Salcida in the sixth at Santa Anita. What were the angles on that one?
Yeah, so like, you know, that's one of those races where we're looking back on it. I had a couple people message me right after the race, you know, good pick, blah, 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 and said, you know, what did you like? What was your angle there? And I had to remind myself, because I looked at like 97 races yesterday, and I looked back, and really she was an alternative to a race that I did not like. The rail horse was 2-1. And I have it in front of me, so I don't remember all this stuff. I don't have that good of a memory. But the rail horse is 2-1, and we all know the rail going down the hill at Santa Anita is no good. The three had you know, poor workouts. The four was cutting back, but was 5-2. You know, I didn't like the 7. I didn't like the 9. I didn't like the 10. And then I started to look at it again, and the only horse that I kind of liked was the 8, and it was 41-1. And I took a chance. You know, that wasn't my A selection. My A selection was the 4, Always a Chance. It was cutting back with Tyler Bayes. And but in that position of the NHC qualify event, I didn't need that horse, you know, because for me, the position I'm in, getting 15th, 16th, 17th place in an NHC event, it doesn't do me any good. I needed to go for the win, and the only horse that would put me in position to do that at that point was the 8 Salcita. Now, I wasn't reaching, like I think, you know, a lot of tournament detractors get mad about, oh, people are reaching for horses. I mean, I said to numerous people before the race, I like this horse, and I used the horse on numerous tournaments. I just, you know, sometimes you just got to take the if you hate, it's not about liking one, it's hating all the rest of them. And that's kind of what led me to that one.
That makes sense. That reminds me of something Eric Moomy once talked to me about in some spots, he'll almost go from the longest shot to the shortest shot, looking at the longer shots and saying, well, why can't this one win, and land on horses that way, almost by default, or not so much default as it's about not liking the shorter prices than it is loving the longer price. And this for you sounds like a combination of those two ideas. Now let's talk about something that people never really think about. Everybody after tournaments, they second guess if this had happened, and I would have won if only X, Y, or Z had happened. But really what it is for me in tournaments, and I didn't get to write about this in the book, but I'll write about it some future time, is there's a decision tree. One thing happens and it leads to another thing happening. And so when you get into this second guessing, a lot of times it's pointless because you're only where you are because of the specifics of what's happened beforehand. That sounds kind of abstract, so we'll talk about a concrete example. Earlier yesterday, I know you liked Freddie's Dream. That was the 12 horse in the fourth race. Freddie's Dream had a tough trip and didn't end up getting done. Maybe even was fifth, but only beaten a length and galloped out past the rest. But was clearly a live 9-1 shot. Now, had Freddie's Dream won at 9-1, you'd have been in a much different position in the contest, and then maybe you would have played Always a Chance instead of Salcita. Or do you think you would have played Salcita just the same?
No, I mean, it just depends on where I was on position. I mean, your point is probably right on that. If Freddie's Dream wins, I'm in a much different position going into the sixth race of Santa Anita. With that said, because I really just kind of need to win or a second or a third in these NHC events, there's a chance I would have used Salcita still. I mean, it just depends, you know. If I was in striking range at that point, I didn't really have a strong opinion on the last two races of the tournament, so it's not like I would have been able to lean on some favorites there to try to creep my way up. It's hard to tell, but I will tell you this, though. When it definitely can impact your decisions down the line, what happens to you, good or bad, early in the tournament, and it can completely change what horses you will play later. And I think it did affect some other spots, like the ninth at Oaklawn. I played a horse that I probably wouldn't have played. It was a shorter-priced horse that I had kind of already X'd out because they got bet down. Molly Z was a Dwayne Lucas horse that got bet down. And I played her as a short-priced horse, and I wouldn't have if I wouldn't have just hit Salcita the race before. So, you know, the decision tree is definitely always changing based on what happens early in these races.
All right, now we're getting into the difficult question portion of today's interview. And I'm going to start off with a very basic, difficult question. Looking at it objectively, how much of the success, this crazy run of success you're on right now, do you feel comes down to luck versus skill?
Right. So I've had a lot of people, and you being one of them, that doesn't really say good luck. And to me, I work really hard. I get up early. I look at the races. I spend, you know, 30 to an hour on every race. At least I try to. It doesn't usually work out, but that's my attempt. So I prepare, and I do all that, but it's luck. You have to be lucky. I mean, you have to have racing luck. You have to have trip luck. you have to have smart jockey luck. You know, I mean, it's all of these things that are out of your control. To think that there's not some luck that's involved would be kind of silly. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it's luck. But at the same time, the consistency of always being in position for that luck to matter, I think, is important. You know, the third race of the tournament yesterday, you know, I had a $13 winner, a $19 total. If I Salcedo means nothing if I don't hit that horse.
Right. No. I think a lot of it comes down to the old Branch Rickey idea that luck is the residue of design, and I think you're a prime example of that. You're absolutely right. I don't tell people good luck in horse racing because, in aggregate, to me, luck shouldn't have anything to do with it. But obviously, in an individual spot, luck is everything. So I absolutely grasp onto what you're saying. But I prefer Godspeed. You know, tell somebody, get home safe, let's just get this one out of the way. But yeah, I hate to admit the role of luck sometimes when it comes to one particular eventuality, even though I know its role can be dominant. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I think that, like, in the overall scheme of things, as a horse player, Godspeed is appropriate. Because, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of the year, at the end of the month, we just want to be ahead. Like, that's the whole purpose of what it is that we do, is we want to have more money than we started with, or at least break even, which would be a lot of work for nothing. And so I think that makes sense. But in a tournament, I really do think you have to get lucky. I mean, in the last race, everyone behind me played this 9-horse at Gulfstream. It was a comeback horse. And the horse opened up by like 8. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they're all going to pass me. And then I look at it even more, and no one behind me played the favorite, and the favorite comes from 8 off of it and wins by 6. Like, that's a little bit of luck. Yeah. I got lucky that no one behind me wanted to protect themselves with a spot by playing the favorite. They all reached and were protecting from people behind them. I got lucky.
All right, back to a couple of other tough questions. Let's talk about on-site events. The hole in your resume right now is the lack of an on-site score. Now, you did great at the NHC, the king of the on-site events, but that's such a unique format. Going forward, do you think you're going to be able to translate all the success you've had online into the on-site world?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I've played in 4, I guess, my whole life. You know, the NHC was alive when I played in. I'm talking like a real money one. I played like a free one at Lone Star or whatever, Lone Star Park. But the NHC, which was, I consider that a win. The BCBC, which was my first time, and a couple things here or there, that would have been a good one. I played in one at Hawthorne, and I actually played, it was like a, you can play multi-race in there. I played the pick 6, and I went 5 of 6. So it's close, right? And I was alive with a significant bankroll at Santa Anita, and I went all in on the last race trying to win. And I got Mike Smith, which is ironic because I have such a love for him. But I'm confident that I'll put a score up at some point. I got a lot that I'm going to go to. I'm going to Keeneland in a couple weeks. I plan on getting back out to Santa Anita for. I'm going to start saying I'm getting back out to the Eddie Logan suite. I'm just getting back to the Eddie Logan suite for the Preakness event that they're going to have on, I think, March 15th, 16th, one of those 2 days. I'll find one. I just got to dig one up somewhere along the way.
Now, the other idea that came up when I was talking to your competition last night as a potential poking a hole in Jonathan Kinchin, you know, when there's a big favorite, the handicapper's job is to try to poke a hole in the favorite, right? So I figure since I cover the contest world, I would try to do that with you. So I was brainstorming with some of your competition. And the other idea that came up was that you've had all the success in this part of the year in Florida at Gulfstream and California with Santa Anita. As the year goes on, the tracks change. Do you think you're going to be able to be just as effective in New York and Kentucky as the year goes on here?
Two of my biggest lifetime scores in real life are at Belmont Park and at Churchill. So I don't know what that means. I'll be fine. You know, I don't ever look at Tampa, and some of my biggest, I've never looked at Tampa historically, and some of my biggest scores over the last 3 months have been at Tampa. I'm ready for Oaklawn to go away because I cannot figure that place out. I usually have a pretty good grasp of what's going on in Southern California as a whole. I don't know what's going to happen when they go to Los Al. But, yeah, I mean, and I really don't feel comfortable at Gulfstream. I don't play that track very well. And looking back on it, I mean, a lot of my wins over the last, and I have my three kind of NHC qualify scores up, and the tracks that I've hit races at are Santa Anita, Tampa, Fairgrounds, Tampa. So it's like I'm not even that comfortable at Tampa. So I'll figure out a way to make it work. I'll adjust. Really, all it takes is opening up the form. I mean, I think all good handicappers as a whole, I mean, I'll handicap the seventh race at Presque Isle and have a shot. You know, so I'll be okay. But I appreciate the attempt to poke holes. But no, I'm not gonna let that one get me.
I love it. I love it. All right, now I understand that you mentioned before, despite your huge weekend, it was nearly even bigger. So what is this? What is this bad beat you're referring to?
Oh man, I really want to go to the Del Mar tournament, but there's no way in the world that my wife is going to be okay with the $6,000 entry fee.
Okay.
So I've got to qualify. And so I've run second like twice in these qualifiers for that event. Yesterday I was in the lead, and there was a 5-1. We kind of figured out that a 5-1 shot couldn't beat me. And so this one horse, the 3-horse, was going from 5-1 to 6-1 to 5-1 to 6-1 to 5-1 to 6-1. And I figured there's no way the guy is going to take the chance of taking this 3-1 shot if he doesn't really know for sure if he's going to go off at 5-1 or 6-1. Well, so I played a different horse to protect myself. He plays the 3. The 3 clicks up to 7-1, comes running late, and nails me on the wire to take away my trip to beautiful San Diego. And I was pretty bummed out. And then I had to realize, like, wait a second, you had a pretty good weekend, so you're going to need to go ahead and get over it.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's nice to know that you have bad beats too, but as for your own emotional state at the end of the day and feeling a little sad or sorry for yourself, for that one I'm going to have to break out the world's smallest violin.
No, fair enough. We don't like losing, even when we're winning. I don't think any of us, that's not how we got into this. It doesn't matter regardless of the situation. I despise losing in all situations. Whether it's chess or checkers or hopscotch, whatever, I don't like losing.
That's great. Jonathan, thanks for coming on the show. We'll have you on again soon.
Talk to you soon. Thanks.
So that was me and Jonathan from earlier this week. I particularly enjoyed his way of dealing with the critics out there. Not that there's many of them, but I like a guy who, you know, doesn't get overly defensive. He just says, hey, I've had the success to this point in the year. Yes, the tracks are going to change. Yes, I still have to do it on site, but these things are within my scope. I'll tell you, for one, I'm not going to be betting against Jonathan Kinchin.
This is a little bit of a tangent but it's stemming from Jonathan. He's a younger guy. He's 32.
32 sounds right.
We know John O'Neill won the NHC, and he's older than 32.
A couple decades older than 32.
We saw the major explosion in tournament play last year. Do you think when people start seeing younger people continuously doing well, and it's not saying that the veterans aren't doing well still, but when they keep seeing the younger people getting involved, do you think that's just going to keep things percolating, keep growing?
Keeps a little bit of an interesting dynamic. I said on the Steve Bick show this week that it reminded me a little bit of like the late 90s in poker. Like,
okay.
Before
the big boom.
Exactly. Like the big boom has clearly not happened quite yet. But things are percolating and there are some interesting dynamics and you see people react in different ways. I in my job, I see this all the time. One thing, I think people see these young guys' names on the leaderboard every week, whether it's, not that he's so young, he's my age, Eric Moomy, but still, I mean, even
so younger.
Yeah, I mean, right, for the average demographic of, especially what the NHC was, say, 5 years ago, a 42-year-old such as myself is not ancient by any means. But they'll see a guy like Moomy's name every week, they see a guy like Jonathan's name every week, and rather than you know how people can be. Instead of looking at things objectively and saying, well, what can I learn? Everybody wants to come up with some easy, silly reason why these young guys are doing well. And what I think, unfortunately, a lot of people gravitate towards is saying, oh, well, you know, that's because they have multiple entries. And you'll see in the blog all the time and on Twitter all the time, I end up sparring with people a little bit who want to attribute the success of some of these, you know, younger players to something like that. And I think it's a mistake that a lot of players make, that they don't sort of look in the mirror and see what they can learn from this newer, aggressive style of play. They want to make it be about something simple that then they don't have to look in the mirror at all. And it does create a little bit of tension and a little bit of an interesting dynamic, though, that you have this this younger generation ever ascended. Of course, you also have players who are sort of in the middle. They're certainly not on the older side of horse players, but they're not as young as the Moomies of the world. Guys like the Sherman brothers, who all they have the right attitude. All they want to do is improve and get better and keep doing what they're doing, learning what they can from the young guys and just incorporating it into their game so they can stay at the very top of the upper echelon in the contest world, which both of them have done since the dawn of the NHC.
I feel like that's kind of one of those things where it's, if you don't want to get past, you need to adapt. You need, you know, it kind of forces your hand, and there's no right or wrong way of going about it, whether you're using, obviously, a lot of people use Formulator, whether you're using some other crazy thing that no one really even knows about. I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to continue to be adapting.
Well, it's the old, the shark theory, to sort of half steal the line from Annie Hall and manipulate it even further. The horse players are like sharks. If you're not moving, you're dying.
Well, and I'll just, with a different kind of sport, I remember a lot of people, and you could, I don't believe it has anything to do with his swing, and I think it has everything to do with what's going on with his personal life. But people would always ask, you know, why Tiger Woods, why is he changing his swing when he's already so far above and beyond everyone else? And he said, because I can always get better. You can always get better. And you know what? Maybe that is going to involve taking a couple steps back before you do get better.
That's true too.
But there's always room for improvement. The minute you think that you know it all or you can't get any better is the minute you're going
to
get passed.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to the biggest bettors in America, guys.
Or if you're out committing adultery and you know you've run into a car and you know the whole nine.
That's a whole other story. But even at the highest levels of the game, guys like Mike Maloney, one of the most famous bettors in America, tells me he still reads all the handicapping books that come out. And I'm thinking, like, what is this guy doing reading books? He should be writing books. And he said, you know, he makes that exact point. I can always be learning. I can always be getting better. There's always something you can brush up on or learn to make yourself better. And you know, one of the things, several of the things we get to play around with here at DRF are good tools that help people do that.
Yeah, no, I think that's just, you've always got to be willing. That's the other part, too, is you got to be willing to try to adapt and try to change. Because if you're just reluctant and you dig your heels in and you just say, no, I'm doing things the way they need to be done, that's when you're going to get in trouble.
Well, and it's hard because it's a balance. You can't win without confidence, right? If you're always looking at what somebody else is doing and worrying about it, like, that's not going to work either. To be able to have so much inner confidence that you know that you're good and you know what you're doing is working, but that you can still get incrementally better, like, that's the sweet spot. And it's hard, and I don't find that the guys, you know, everybody at the track, it's a know-it-all game in a lot of ways. And you know, the best players, though, are not like that. I think the know-it-alls, what they have that's great is probably the confidence to bet right in a lot of occasions. So right, at least when their opinion is right, they make some noise. But I think that also, that kind of like false confidence almost can be a bit of a glass ceiling too.
No, I would agree completely. And again, that was an unplanned sort of tangent, but that's what we're here for.
The feedback I've gotten is that people like us talking about some of these other more ephemeral areas of horse playing beyond the nuts and bolts. So hopefully folks were interested in that little discussion.
I think we're going to get into the nuts and bolts now, though. We've got the four public handicapper races. I'm going to be completely honest up front. I'm going to have to lean on you guys, because just with the amount of stuff that's been going on, I haven't had a chance to look at the Honey Fox or the Orchid yet.
Okay, that's fair.
I've done Louisiana. I've done Florida Derby. I know the horses in the other races, so I can chime in there. But as far as a pick or anything like that, I got nothing for you.
That makes me wish I was more a little more creative. Just because I don't know that this counts as creative. I wanted to try to come up with something for the Honey Rider, and I did as Mike.
Honey Fox.
Oh, excuse Honey me. Fox. I wrote Honey Rider on my paper here.
Honey Fox,
Honey,
by the
Honey
way.
Honey Rider was a nice horse. Yeah. But it's just is not
doesn't
a
have a grade two at Gulfstream name.
For everyone's sake, it's the 10th at Gulfstream tomorrow, 4:30 Eastern is the post, grade two, mile on the grass, fillies and mares four and up.
Mike took a guess that I was going to back Lady Laura in here. And it's true that the form of that last race has worked out super well, even though the winner has disappointed since. Her form had been well established before that, and a bunch in that race have come back to improve significantly, which you can see if you go in the charts on Formulator and look at the next out buyers. A whole bunch of them have improved, and horses like Sandiva and Testarossi have won. Lara's going to be longer than Sandiva, despite having beaten her. I like that. But at the end of the day, I'm worried about Lara being too far back here or maybe short of fitness off the layoff. I'm going to take a shot here to catch the speed of the speed with Istanford. I'm hoping Johnny V opts to rate Party Now down on the inside. She's done okay before from just off. And if it's like many days where the Gulfstream turf is kind of speed, maybe Istanford forgets to stop and is a square price. I was a little taken aback that the morning line was only 5-1. I was thinking it'd be higher than that. But I think for public handicapper, I may take a shot and hope people land in the other logical places. And most people are going to look at that form and see Pop and Stop. And on this course, on this day, I could see things going okay for her.
Hogan.
Well, you mentioned the morning line. This is a 9-horse field, and 6 of them are between 3-1 and 6-1 on the morning line. So for me, it, just like the Orchid, actually, these are very similar races from a handicapping and wagering standpoint. For me, it all comes down to, not especially for public handicapper, not just handicapping the horses, but handicapping the price.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure.
What are you guessing is going to happen price-wise?
You know, for me, I think Coffee Click is the question. You know, she's the class of the field. If she gets bet heavily,
she's got to get hammered, doesn't she?
I would think, but I think Sandiva's going to take a lot of money.
I do too.
You know, I think Lady Lara may take some money. I think Istanford is going to drift up.
Yeah, that was my hope.
I think Party Now is going to drift up. I think maybe even, I don't know, Marbury Rose is probably about square at 6-1, maybe even a little lower. I saw the race similar to you. I saw Istanford as being low and early speed. I thought Party Now could sit a nice tracking second position, take over, and win just like she did in the Keeneland Allowance race back last April. She's my pick here because I'm thinking she'll get overlooked a little bit from a price standpoint. But, you know, a lot of it really just comes down to how they bet. And I think Coffee Click is also vulnerable off the layoff.
Just with a quick pass through right now, I'm probably leaning toward Party Now. This is, again, one of the first times I'm giving this a fair look. Coffee Click, there's no arguing that she was razor sharp. But then you don't just put a horse away for all those months when you're winning graded stakes.
Yep.
You know, something had to go wrong. I don't know what that something was, but... Marb Rose on the outside, I think she's one, just based on the running style, could work out a good trip because there are a couple of fillies in here that like to be forwardly placed. Maybe that one can sit off a little bit. I'd imagine Sandiva is going to be your post-time favorite. I think they're going to see Pletcher, Castellano. They're going to see all the recency, the graded wins down there.
It is interesting Castellano picked that horse instead
over
of Coffee Click. You'd figure that's the case, and maybe, not, I mean, I don't know, it could be because of the relationship with Pletcher.
Right, it's such an important client was the one thing I was thinking. But
he's not riding Pletcher in the Florida Derby. So
I think it has more to do with, you know, you get to a certain point, and I don't think Todd can knock anyone, you know, in a graded stake. If you think, and I'm saying not Todd knocking anyone, it's more a matter of, I think he thinks that Sandiva is right now.
Yeah.
Maybe Coffee Click needs one before we see your best foot.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I was just thinking if they were even anywhere close, he's going to go with Pletcher. You know what I mean?
Fair.
Fair
point.
Yeah.
Again, that was just my quick first pass through. My picks will be up there probably sometime tomorrow, maybe on later on tonight because I'm going to be here late. So the second PH race, if I can pull Formulator out of the way, it's the Orchid. It's the 11th at Gulf, 5:15 Eastern post time. Grade 3, mile and a half on the grass. Fillies and mares, 4-year-old and up. Gentlemen?
Why don't you start this one, Mike, because hopefully you'll have something more interesting than me.
Well, you know, this is another one where I can make a case for probably just about any horse in the field if I got the right price.
Isn't that true of every race?
No. No.
Because it is for me.
Well,
I mean, if I mean, got the right price.
I guess, yeah. Where if you're going
to... 600 to 1.
Sure, sure, sure. I mean, within reason.
Okay, okay.
Realistically. You know, I think, boy, Riposte seems like she's the class, the field. But I think she's going to be bet pretty heavily, and I'm going to try and beat her here. There's two that I'm likely, and maybe even a third that I'm likely to look at. But really the two I would probably lean most heavily on, and it's going to come down to price. Beauty Parlor making her debut in North America for Christophe Clément is extremely intriguing, especially if you can get anywhere near that 6-1 morning line. Johnny V is enticed to ride, and we know how Christophe does with these European shippers. And then the other one is the outside filly for Graham Motion, who just excels in these turf marathons, especially graded stakes turf marathons. I got to like the jockey switch from Hernandez to Leperoux going three turns on the turf. You know, I'm just afraid she's going to get bet down from her 4-1 morning line.
Well, you know, this is where my being a fan of European racing maybe hurts me. I tried to like Beauty Parlor, but at the end of the day, looking at a horse who has pretty blah form racing at minor tracks in France is very tough to support over a Group 2 winner who was beaten less than two in the Irish Oaks. And that's one of the reasons why I sort of came back around to Riposte here, who I'm expecting to get a perfect trip on or near the lead. She's fast and she's classy, and I could see that, you know, the good stick and kick type trip. I just don't know what to make of the listed fractions from the last race. They seem just impossibly slow.
No, they walked.
Do you think that's legit?
No, yeah, we watched. Like, it was embarrassing.
I mean, I watched the race too, but you could tell, like, they crazy. Were.
I mean,
but even if it is, I mean, even if it is right, if it is right, I think that's a case where you, like, yeah, you want to control the pace and slow it down if you're a speed horse, but you don't want to go that slow because you sort of cede your advantage and let everybody else stay in the race by being a little passive. Now, with Castellano aboard, I'm expecting better things. I am reserving the right to maybe get creative, but I'm probably just going to go with Riposte here.
I know where I'm going to end up, and I really haven't even gone through all the horses in this race. I know that 6-1 on Clément's Firster is that not going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
The Beauty Parlor first time in North America.
The other Clément to me, going back to that Riposte race where she walked,
yep.
I liked Todd Breed a little bit that day. I was afraid of the pace scenario. It didn't work to her advantage. The way that she ran on, though, and she was a hot mess that day, too. If you go back and you watch the replay, I remember she was a washy mess, and she ran a huge, huge race.
She ran great that day.
If she can get a little bit more in front of her, a little bit more. I don't need it to be a ton. A little bit more pace in front of her. I know the distance isn't a problem. I'll give her a shot. I think the stretch out from 3/8 to a half is going to work in her favor. I'm probably going to end up going with the Breed.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing, and I got a stat for Clément. He's last 5 years, he's 8-20 with a second and four thirds and a 4.47 ROI last 5 years in turf routes with foreign shippers off a layoff of 180 days or more. The interesting thing for me out of all of that is he's only put two into a graded stakes. Most of them come over in an allowance or possibly a lower level listed stake. So tells me he, despite the form and your concerns about who she was facing overseas, it sounds to me like Clément has some confidence in this one. So
yeah, he's such a good trainer. I mean, I'm not saying I can't throw in. I just couldn't pick her over Riposte at the end of the day.
Fair point.
The Louisiana Derby is set for a post time of 5:24 Central, 6:24 Eastern. It's the 11th at Fairgrounds. You got a field of nine. It's a Grade Two. It's $1 million purse. Mile and eighth on the main track for three-year-olds. Do you want me to start since I've actually gone through this race?
Yes.
And then you guys
Why don't you start on this one? And then I know this was one that Mike mentioned in his Bet This Not That column that just went up on the site that folks should check out. A bunch of thoughts about Saturday's races at Gulfstream and this race from the Bet This Not That perspective.
Now, I know, I said it earlier on live, and I don't know if it's in your article or not. I know the horse I love is don't bet this horse because the numbers for Romans and grade ones on dirt apparently are diseased recently. Keen Ice is sitting on a monster race. I have no quips about that. He may not quite be good enough to win. I think he's going to, He's going to get a ton of pace to run into. The amount of horses that need the lead in this race to have any chance of winning, I think is through the roof. I think St. Joe Bay is going to go. I know some people think he's going to be loose. I'm going to be shocked if he is loose on the front end. You look at Fusici Flame. I know he's slow. You look at the fractions that this one's set. Only two times in this one's career that the horse has won has been on the lead. You have to. They have to be smart enough to read the form and say, all right, we need to get the lead. They're going to go.
Chance, yeah.
Stanford from the rail is going to go. Mr. Z, even though taking the hood off, he's going to be forwardly placed. International Story doesn't need to come from a million out of it. He'll be, you know, coming from off the pace. But you look at War Story, he's going to sit a really decent trip too. I know he came from well out of it last time, but I would imagine he's going to be more three or four lengths out of it. Keen Ice is going to be rolling late. He's paired up his last two buyers of 88s as a forward move sitting on there. He's got Curlin on top. He's got an awesome again mare. All systems go Keen Ice. I'm pissed about the 5-1 morning line.
See, yeah, that is short, isn't it?
And I'll jump in here, and this is where I love this, because we are reading this race completely differently.
Okay.
Love it. I love it. But first I'll throw that Dale Roman stat at you. Last 5 years, he's 3-for-51 with 5 seconds and 8/3, 85-cent ROI in dirt route grade one stakes. If you take away Shackleford, he's 0-for-40 with 2 seconds.
I was going to say Shackleford is the good part of the stat.
Right.
Yes. Shackleford got three wins and 3 seconds. So in the last 5 years, he's 2-for-40 in the exacta in dirt grade one stakes. So, but that said, if you see the race shaping up the way you do, he makes sense, because I think he may be one of the best closers, if not the best closer in the race. I just, however, think that a horse like St. Joe Bay, who is my bet this play, ran such an amazing race in the last out in that, what was the Risen Star?
Definitely a flow upgrade.
Set very, very fast fractions. Dueling with 111-1 Gennady Dorochenko,
shocked, by the way, he doesn't have one.
Yes. Dueling with that horse, okay? Put that horse away. In fact, the other three horses that were up near the lead finished the last three positions. He set it up for the three horses that were far back to come overtake him late. He only lost by 2 lengths, finished fourth by 2 lengths, was only a neck away from, or a head away from Keen Ice for the show position. You go back to the prior races, he was running against Prospect Park, Calculator, Conquest Typhoon. At least two of those, if they were running in this field, would be clear odds-on favorites.
Whoa.
I think so.
Conquest Typhoon?
No. I said at least two of those.
Meaning
Calculator
and
Prospect Park.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In Conquest Typhoon's not a bad horse himself. You know,
he ran well last week.
So, he, to me, and I don't know, in the question, there's a couple questions, of course, which is why you're going to get a nice price. The question is, what does Robbie Alvarado do with him? Does he sit a little? Does he go? I think if he wants to, even if the others want the lead, I think he may be fastest early. And I think with a little bit of a stretch out, it's actually almost counterintuitive that early speed actually holds on better at the mile and an eighth. It's a stretch out to a mile and an eighth. Yeah, so he gets an extra half furlong. He's the one that I would take a stand with, because I just don't trust any of the rest of them, and I think you're going to get short prices on the ones that seem like logical contenders. I think especially with Mr. Z taking the blinkers off, he could be the fastest early.
For me, if you've been listening to the stuff I've had to say ever since the Risen Star, you know I'm a War Story guy. I got him in our draft on Wednesday. If folks missed that show, we got some real nice feedback on it. It might be worth one in particular, a show that's worth going back and listening to even after the fact, because people seem to enjoy a little bit of our back and forth about our turning our Derby top fives into actual stables of five. A little more about that contest later in the show. But I see no reason to get off of War Story here. I thought he ran great last time. I think he'll get a setup. My read of the race is closer to Matt's than Mike's in terms of the pace, just looking at who's going to do what here. And I think it could set up very nicely for War Story, who I harbor a suspicion might be a little bit better than International Star.
I can't argue with that. I think of those horses, I think War Story is the one that has the most upside, where I think there's still more there. I mean, he's still clearly a bit of a peanut brain. If he can ever get out of the gate, I think he could be a really good one. So I can't argue with that pick there.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy Amos is such a pro. I trust him to have him straightened out. And if you remember, too, there was that weird little hiccup with training last time with him where he shipped to Arkansas and then shipped back. I'm not, you know, I don't know what that took out of him, what it didn't. But really, you know, a horse that's had four races, it's a strong-looking developmental pattern to me. Like, similar to what you were saying about Keen Ice, I think I could see a big move forward coming from War Story.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Fourth and final PH race of the weekend. It's the 14th. Why on earth are there 14 races carded? I mean, that just...
They do this to us every year.
Going out with a bang.
Look, I love the Travers. That day is miserably long. Miserably long.
Oh, you got to hang out with us up in the... me and the boys from L.A., Lower Albany, up in the patio above Shake Shack, and we get the free food and drink all day. They could have carded another 14. We'd still be hanging out
11:30 to 7, there's no excuse. There's no excuse.
You need a good setup for a day like
that.
The
14th at Gulfstream Park, 6:48 Eastern. It's the Grade 1 Florida Derby, $1 million the purse. Three-year-olds, 9 furlongs on the main track. Peter Thomas Fornatel.
Well, this was the horse I got. Well, we both felt robbed when Mike took ahead of us here. Was where I was going to land. Sort of, you know, now that Kozan is on the sidelines, we need another lightly raced Todd Pletcher,
3-year-old,
to be a
first,
major.
Yeah,
who started the
trying
career
to break
at
Apollo.
Three exactly. And I'm talking, of course, about Materiality. For me, this is a little bit of a I don't know how good the Fountain of Youth was pick. But I figure with Upstart and it's a knockout, even with the gaudy buyer on Materiality, maybe the morning line, maybe there's something to the idea of getting 3-1 on this horse.
Oh.
No chance?
No.
No?
I think he might be second choice.
I think he's going to be a close second choice. Yeah.
Okay.
He's going to be closer to 2.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I could live with that.
Too.
I could live with that.
That's my fear,
I don't, too. I just don't know about, I want to see more from It's a Knockout, and I haven't been on the Upstart bandwagon. This would seem a very strange place to jump on it. So it's Materiality for me. I'm curious to see what you guys have to say. Maybe somebody has something clever here.
Well, you know, he's the one that I think would be most likely to win. Materiality.
Okay.
But I'm just concerned about the price. I think Matt's right that you're going to get closer to 2-1. I think It's a Knockout's going to drift up. But I don't like him. I didn't like him in the last race. I don't like him here. The one I might take a stab with from a contest standpoint is the rail horse, Amy's Flatter. You know, improved.
We've liked before.
I have liked before. I thought improved certainly was no disgrace losing to Carpe Diem in the last out. I think may have improved with the Lasix and the Blinkers. Now getting a second race with both of those. Now gets a relatively nice jockey upgrade in the Eclipse Award winner, Javier Castellano. Gets the rail, could sit a nice trip. You know, I don't know if 8-1 is the right price. It might be a little lower, but that's the one. If anyone is going to upset the top three, I think that's the one.
You know, you had mentioned you there's no reason now, or now would be an odd time for anyone that was against Upstart to get on. I agree with that, but there's something about it. I keep looking back at that race. And we watched it again earlier when we were on live. He still won that race by like almost three lengths.
Yeah.
And I know he was shortening pretty badly, but if you watch the entire trip, he was wide throughout too.
Yes.
And if you do, now I didn't buy it and I still am a little skeptical about the real info on it. But if you believe Rick Violet that he wasn't cranked up and that now, and you see he's breathing fire, he's coming out with 59-2, 13-2, 48-2. If you think that he's actually going to be tuned up for this one, and he wasn't in the last one, and he still ran as well as he did, again, I'm the last person that would be sitting here picking chalk, generally. I'm not going to marry myself to it. I think I'm picking Upstart. If it's not Upstart, I'm going to pick It's a Knockout. Just because I think It's a Knockout, and Dan brought this up, I think he's probably right, that you're going to flip It's a Knockout Materiality, odds-wise. It's a Knockout, probably closer to 3. Materiality closer to 2. Upstarts, I think 8-5 is right. Maybe a little less. Maybe 6-5.
Yeah.
I was thinking shorter.
Than 6-5?
Well, shorter than 8-5. So 6-5 sounds right.
I just, there's something about it that, you know what? and I don't know why, but maybe I'm questioning myself all along that, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he's now on my draft. He's part of my team.
That's true. You do have a vested interest now.
But maybe I was just wrong. I mean, I've been wrong a lot in this prep season, so maybe he's just better than I've.
Hey, he's an A for me. I just didn't want to hang my top pick on him, honestly. I mean, he's my other A in the race, and I don't think it's a knockout.
I think that's the other problem for me, though, is that it's such an uninteresting race to me.
It's not great.
It's those three and then everyone else.
If I play this race, my two A's are materiality in upstart, and then I use Amy Slatter as a B, and I just try and beat it to knockout.
And you try to get Amy Slatter focused a little more underneath, you're thinking, or you really think he has a chance to win too?
You know, I think it's possible. I think, you know, it could improve, and I don't know who he beat there, but he was well clear of Divining Rod, who was then well clear of the rest of the field. You know, I mean, and there's no disgrace. Boy, I think if Carpe Diem were in this field, Carpe Diem would be odds on. You know, no disgrace losing to Carpe Diem the first time with blinkers. And if he improves at all, I think he could be a player.
Yeah, it just seems like a very uninteresting race to me. I don't know. I'm anxious to watch it.
Yeah.
Definitely not anxious to bet it. I don't look at it as a fun betting race.
Well, what about our formulator fact that Dan pulled out for number 8, Decabrist?
Oh, my God. He put that on earlier today. Yeah. He started laughing.
Yeah.
What was it?
Classic.
Gennady Dorochenko.
Classic.
I got it.
Yeah.
Read it, please.
So it's Gennady Dorochenko. The horse is coming from a 7.5 furlong turf sprint down at the fairgrounds. So strictly a sprint, okay? Even though it was probably two turns, it's considered a sprint.
Right.
Now moving from turf to dirt, stretching from sprint to route in a graded stakes. Last 5 years, Gennady Dorochenko, 1-for-1, $220 ROI.
I remember that race.
Yeah, the Louisiana Derby.
Order.
Yep. Louisiana That's Derby at 110-1.
Well, see, stats can help you in your handicapping, or they can just give you a good laugh.
Or they can give you a good chuckle, yeah.
Does lightning strike, you know, and as Jake put it earlier, that was Gennady Dorochenko's mic drop moment.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's like, why does he enter these horses? And, you know, that's it right there.
If that horse wins, throw every other horse out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, you had to do that in the Louisiana Derby that year, right? Nobody wanted, I mean, you know. Rousing Sermon wasn't going to win the Derby. Who's the horse?
Mark Valesky.
Mark Valesky was not going to win the Derby.
Cigar Street ran third in that race.
Well,
and he ended up getting
No. Rousing Sermon ran third.
He ran fourth.
So, he must have ran fourth.
So, you know. But, all right. So, we've got some picks in. My final picks are probably going tomorrow. I may put some in. Keen Ice, that one ain't changing.
You feel good about that one, yeah.
That's the one I'm looking forward to. Could be completely wrong. I said it when we just did our little video with it. I said, I think he's going to win this weekend. I don't think he can win the Kentucky Derby, but he can definitely run second, third, or fourth because he's going to be closing. He's got the running style. He'll get the points after this weekend. He's bred for it, and he happens to have the same connections as Dullahan.
He was on my list of horses to pick in our draft. You just got to him first. I like everything you're saying about that horse.
So we'll see.
I should point out the Kinchin interview a little bit longer than some of the previous ones.
Okay.
So we are like approaching
the
hour.
Up. Okay. Yeah, we're going to wrap up here pretty quick because we don't really have much else to discuss.
We got the contest, right?
It has to do with California Chrome. Mike, you want to...
Yeah, so, you know, we did this a few weeks ago when California Chrome ran against Shared Belief. We're going to do this again. We've got some more autographed, signed by Victor Espinoza, autographed photos of California Chrome. We're going to give, we were talking about giving up to 3 of them away. And the way you win is you send an email to podcast@drf.com and give us your cold trifecta for the Dubai World Cup.
Trippy.
Yeah.
I like it. And then we also decided for our contest, we found it's looking good that on the line, a bobblehead of the winner.
Yes.
Paid for by the losers.
Yes.
Bobblehead time, baby.
Bobblehead.
And what kind of bobblehead is it?
It's a jockey. Yes. If we get the one we want, and we got to make some phone calls and make sure we can, you know, hopefully get this all arranged, but a jockey riding a horse with a bobblehead.
Yes. Could you imagine?
Yes.
A bobblehead of Pete Fornital with the big beard on a horse.
No.
Could you even imagine?
I couldn't.
Can I wear this cap instead of a jockey hat?
I hope so. I hope. I mean, with a little whip.
Yeah.
Oh my God! It'd be this would fantastic. Be
right on the Wall of Fame at home.
This would be and whoever it ends up being. I mean, we'll tweet it out. We'll show the picture.
Oh yeah.
We have to.
Oh my God! We're gonna get endless.
No,
you guys are gonna have to live with all these photos for weeks.
I can picture it now. I've got my signed Pet Sounds record. I've got one of my prized win photos from one of my horses, and then it'll be me on the bobblehead.
Well, look at you. So you're calling your shot.
I'm calling my shot. Wow. It's gonna be me.
You're already clearing off space on the mantle.
Wow. Yeah, I'm gonna when I get home today, I'm gonna clear the spot.
Oh, okay.
Wow. And that'll be my mental motivation here.
Look at this guy. Yeah. I love it. Love wow. it. I'm all about.
I learned bravado. It by watching you.
I was
going to
say, I learned it by bravado. Watching let's you. Let's do it. let's see. So we went over that real quick. And before we leave, this will be the final kind of thing. Real quick, Dubai, we have to talk about the World Cup.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah.
We have to talk about the World Cup.
There's some other racing going on this weekend.
The World Cup, I mean, obviously for us over here, it's Chrome. Do either one of you think Chrome loses?
You know, I guess you could foresee a possibility where he does, but I think he's certainly the most likely winner.
I'll be rooting like crazy for him. I'd love to see him win.
I'm going against, sorry, won't. I like Lee.
Yeah, I love Lee as a horse. Lee might be the bet.
I think we talked about it, too. Maybe this is just too simplistic. Bill Mott is not going to send him over there if he doesn't think he can win.
It's not simplistic at all.
I mean, it's just simple as that. I don't even need to go any farther than it.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing to me is going to be watching some of those other horses. If you watch any of the replays of, like, the Al Maktoum round two or round three, they all just absolutely – you talk about resent kickback. Holy smokes, man. You should see some of these runners.
Prince Bishop runs
like crazy. But, my God, I've never seen a horse in a mile and a quarter race – under the whip, out of the gate, and the entire way around, and he still runs. It's going to be really interesting to see that.
He won the first Dubai World Cup, and maybe he'll win the most recent one, Bill Mott.
Yeah.
In terms of rooting wise, you would like to see Chrome win, right?
I don't think it would be a bad thing. Rooting wise, there's a part of me that we know what Chrome is. I still think there's a part of me that thinks that, you know, to put all the naysayers to bed. Then he's a horse for course. He only likes Gulfstream. I don't know what Lee. I think Lee could be something more. I'm not saying more than Chrome, but more than what we've seen. You know, I felt like he got shafted with the way that track played on Don Day, and I thought he ran huge.
He ran great that day.
And other than that, he's only done things that I've been like blown away by on the dirt. So I don't know. There's rooting and wager wise. If I do make a bet, which is highly unlikely. I'm in the Lee camp for this one. And it's nothing against Chrome. I mean, if Lee doesn't win, I want Chrome to win.
I was going to ask what kind of price you'd want on Lee.
I would love what a lot of European books are shooting him around at now, 3.5 to 1. Anything less than that, I'm probably going to pass.
My concern is he'd probably be lower. I mean, obviously, Chrome's going
to
take some
money.
He's
5 to 2 on the line.
Yeah.
I'm just going based on trying to get an idea based on the European. Now, that's probably foolish.
Right.
Because the American money that pours
it's
in.
It's going to be heavy on the American.
There's a good chance, though, that based on that, Chrome is 3 to 5. I mean,
right.
Let's be honest.
Could be.
You know,
could be.
So we'll see. I don't know. It's probably a race that I'm going to watch. UAE Derby. Anything exciting? Mubtaiz is a decent horse.
I was this close to picking Mubtaiz.
I think you can beat him. I think he can beat him.
My Johnny B. Good could beat him?
I think My Johnny B. Good is very likely to run last or second to last.
Okay.
I've lost all faith.
I
said it earlier today. I'm not even going to venture a guess as to what the hell the plan is with that one. I have no idea.
Well, yeah, because if my Johnny B. Good wins, you know that none of those horses are very good. Because we've seen him run here. We've seen him be a little under.
I don't know that I would say that none of the horses are any good.
Well,
I mean
for the Derby. I mean,
I don't think any of them are good for the Derby.
Okay.
Any of them are. I mean,
you don't think one of them runs off the screen and, you know.
Even if they do, you're going to bet them in the Derby?
No.
I mean, I don't think any of those horses are legitimate Kentucky Derby ones. And it sounds like the only one right now that would even come over would be Mubtaiz.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's got a shot.
Yeah.
I got to look at those races. We got Main Sequence too.
Main Sequence against Flintshire, against some other good ones.
Great race.
We've got a couple other Americans. We've got Secret Circles over there, Saludos Amigos, Distinctive Passion, Green Mask. We had Justin Zayden in here earlier. He's got Prayer for Relief, running the Godolphin Mile. 20-1 line, I think he could win in there. I mean, I'm a little bit more intrigued, though, with Sloan Avenue. I think Sloan Avenue is a good one. He was supposed to come over here for the Don.
He's just got a break.
Well, that's a...
He's got a break.
Yeah, that's important. That's definitely important.
But
he's
dwelling.
He's got very nice pedigree as far as the surface is concerned. So.
When do those races start tomorrow?
The UAE Derby starts at 9:55 Eastern.
That's when the UAE Derby is, or when their first race for Maiden is?
UAE Derby. That's the third race, I think. The first race is the Godolphin Mile.
Okay.
First stakes race. I think there's one under the first race. I don't even know what it is, but the second race is the Godolphin Mile. That post maybe 9:15-ish, I think. I mean, tomorrow's one of those days. It's a marathon day.
Yeah.
It's a marathon day.
When do you and Dan start on DRF Live?
We start at 2 o'clock. We'll be going 2 o'clock right through. The final race we'll be doing is the Tokyo City from Santa Anita. Going 1.5 miles on the dirt. So we're going to go do that one. But obviously the focus tomorrow is Gulfstream, Fairgrounds. We mix in that one race from Santa Anita. We'll go back. We'll recap everything from Dubai earlier in the day. The World Cup's post time is 1 o'clock Eastern. So you don't have to get up too early if you don't want to watch the other stuff. But, it'll be a long, long day of racing. And who knows? We'll see. Maybe we get some good performances.
So. That's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to it, and you and Dan will definitely be part of my Saturday, as you've been the past few weeks.
Sounds good. I'll come in a little bit more cleaned up, a little tightened up as far as the facial hair is concerned.
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, none of that. Any final stuff?
May you win all your photos.